You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. When you hear Wish Upon a Star, you might think of Disney, maybe Disneyland. But about 30 years ago, you could find a major Disney star in a northern Iowa cornfield. Growing Magic, the Mickey Mouse cornfield story, was written and produced by Buena Vista University digital media students. Last night, students from BVU premiered the documentary film that was more than 3 years in the making. It's the story of Disney and an Iowa farmer who created a 520-acre card in a cornfield for Mickey Mouse's birthday in 1988.
Well, we had heard that they were planting this out there, and we heard it was for the airlines to fly over and see it.
And this was a central flyway over. We didn't realize it. We didn't look up that much.
They end up finding Walt Bulge. And when they said this man, this owner's name is Walt, I thought, okay, we have to check this out.
The 60-minute documentary was written and produced by BVU digital media students under the direction of Jerry Johnson, assistant professor of digital media and an avowed Walt Disney fanatic. I talked with Jerry and two of his students who had been working on the documentary for the past 3 years. How did that happen with the cornfield and Disney choosing that cornfield over like all the cornfields that it could have chosen?
Jack Lindquist, who was the vice president of publicity for Disneyland, would fly from Walt Disney World in Orlando to Disneyland in Anaheim, and he would fly over Texas, and he would see these oil circles. And he thought, you know, three of those together could make a Mickey Mouse. And so he went back to Disneyland, and he asked the Disney pilots on where is the most traveled air traffic in the United States, and it's in North Iowa, Northwest Iowa. And so they searched and they contacted Iowa State University, and they were directed to North Iowa by Sheffield, Iowa. And they found a person who owned this land. His name was Walt Bulge. And when they heard that his first name was Walt, they were very excited. And so Disney contacted ISU, worked with ISU, and then went up to Sheffield and met with the Pitzenberger family, who farms the land, and they worked that out.
So how did this all work then? Did the family have a contract with Disney to do this? Was there money exchanged?
There was an agreement. Contract was written. Once Disney found the family, they invited the Pitzenberger family and the Bulge family out to Walt Disney World to spend a week. And the Pitzenbergers, Judy Pitzenberger, who is the wife of Ted Pitzenberger, joked that I think they were checking us out to make sure we were a normal family. And after that week, they signed the contract on the back of the car before they took him back to the airport to come back to Iowa. So it was a contract. It was all planned by Disney, the Walt Disney Company. It was an event. It wasn't something where someone came to Disney and go, hey, look what we made. It was really organized and orchestrated by the Walt Disney Company.
I saw in the clips from your documentary some of the field and some of the day when the Mickey Mouse characters and other characters came to the cornfield. It's really kind of... They're in a court and there's a limo in the cornfield.
Yeah.
Now, you know, most of us would never think about bringing a limo to a cornfield, let alone with Disney characters.
Well, in 1988, there wasn't a lot of Uber and a lot of rental cars like we have today. So really the only thing that was available was these limousines out of Des Moines. So they flew into Des Moines, then came, and then they started to use the Mason City Airport. But when the characters were in the field, the idea was Minnie, Donald, and Goofy was going to create a birthday card for Mickey. So those three characters came out to plant this field to look like Colonel Mickey with a K. And then when they were there, they cordoned off an area around the field so no one knew they were there. They snuck them in, shot all day, and snuck them back out. And in fact, sometimes they would block cars from going through because they didn't want anybody to know what they were doing at first.
How do you do that to design something like that that's perfectly symmetrical that you can see from the sky?
Well, a Disney artist by the name of Matt Mew was assigned to design the character. This was before GPS. And so what they did was he designed this character of Mickey Mouse, and it was a side silhouette of his face. And he said he wanted to make sure that it was not a happy circumstance, that it actually was to be Mickey Mouse. So he drew the Mickey Mouse head. They sent it to a surveyor up in Mason City, and then they mapped it out by placing these small flags in the area, and then they farmed and planted in the middle of these fields.
When was this completed?
Well, it all started in February with a dye test. They went up in an airplane and they put some dye on some land to see if they could see the dye from the air. Once they could figure it out that it could be seen, they then started to prepare for that. So in April, they planted the cornfield, and then it started to take shape in June, and they were trying to keep it secret. And so finally, people were starting to get kind of curious. They thought something is forming in this field, and like crop dusters or other airplanes would go over and they could see something starting to take shape. So finally, they got to Jack Lindquist and said, Jack, you have got to do something because people are starting to figure this out. So they released it in June that they were having this Mickey Mouse cornfield. And by July, it was starting to take shape. It was getting a lot of press. People were excited about it. Airlines were showing people the Mickey Mouse cornfield. And so they decided that they would have Disney Days in Sheffield and the seven surrounding surrounding communities. And then that was in August. And then in October and November, they harvested the Mickey Mouse cornfield. And that's when Mickey did come back out during the harvest. And while he was here, he helped them harvest the field. And then he also visited some of the area schools and the hospital to visit the children. And as soon as they harvested the corn, the Mickey ears, if you will, that was the end of the Mickey Mouse cornfield, and there's never been one since. In fact, in the Guinness Book of World Records, it's still considered the largest field mouse.
How did you decide, we should make a documentary about this?
Well, it was fascinating. When I read about it, I contacted the Sheffield City Hall, and they gave me Judy Pitzenberger's name, and I talked with her, and it just sounded really intriguing. So I went to my students at the time and said, hey, I have an idea. What if we did this historical documentary about the Mickey Mouse cornfield with an Iowa connection? And they were kind of interested. And so what we did was we piled into a van and we drove to Sheffield and spent a Saturday. We met with the Pitzenbergers, we toured the area, we talked to other people involved. And at the end of the day, we said, do we want to do it? And they all said yes. And so we started that trek from there. We started with interviews, we started with research. We went through the process of transcribing and searching and those kind of things. So it all started from a visit to Sheffield to see if it would be a good story.
And you're a major Disney fan.
I am a major Disney fan. I enjoy Disney studies. Every January, I take a group of students to some Disney destination where we learn about storytelling. I also enjoy collecting Disney memorabilia. My office is full of Disney product. So if you ever want to see anything Disney, come on over to my office.
What kind of destinations have you gone to with students? This sounds like a fun class.
Yeah, we've gone to Walt Disney World. We've done the Disney Cruise. We've done Disneyland, the Disney Studios. One of my bucket lists experiences for the students is going to be hopefully international Disney, like Paris or maybe Tokyo. And when we go to these places, we go behind the scenes and we spend time with Imagineers, artists, cast members, learning about stories. And we also meet up with historians, and it's a community within itself. And it's really hard to explain for those who are not in that Disney community, but it just gels off itself, and it's interesting to study. And Walt Disney, the man, had so many good philosophies. It's really cool to use those in storytelling, especially in our digital media major. So it just ties in really nice.
I talk with two students who have been working on this project with Jerry for about 2.5 to 3 years.
I'm Olivia Weisler. I'm a junior digital media major, English minor, and I'm from St. Helena, Nebraska.
Hi, I'm Mason McGrew. I'm a sophomore digital media major, and I'm from Ankeny, Iowa.
And maybe you can tell me a little bit about what you did, what kind of things that you contributed to the film.
Well, most recently, I worked on color correcting every shot and B-roll shot inside of the documentary, and I finished that up about a week ago. And other than that, I worked with stringing all of the footage together, and I didn't really get to be a part of the project until after all the interviews were done. So I've captured some B-roll for that would lay over the interviews, but I never actually got to be a part of any of the information gathering on that end.
And you said that you had worked on the script, is that right?
We were in a digital media kind of gathering, learning about BBTV and everything, and Jerry had come up to me and said, you know, we know you kind of like to write and everything. Would you be interested as a freshman to write the script for this documentary? And I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, but I was like, sure, why not? This seems like a good opportunity to kind of dabble in something different. I've never done anything like this before. And so my freshman year, I ended up going through all of the interviews. Jerry gave me two ginormous binders of articles and newspapers and all of the interviews, transcription interviews and everything. And I just went through it all and was sticky noting where the different good quotes were, where good stories were at. And then my sophomore year, I finally started putting it all together into one big script.
It's really exciting. This has been such a, I guess, long incoming kind of project, but it must be really gratifying to see, you know, students do this, complete this, and learn so much and gain so much experience.
Yeah, and it's kind of a neat way of connecting with the students and giving them that hands-on experience, and also creating relationships from a storytelling perspective and also from a professional perspective. When we started this 3.5 years ago, we started with two students by the name of Chelsea and Zach, and they graduated 1.5 years ago. Well, when we were offered to do an interview with one of the main characters in our documentary, they're out in California. The person we were interviewing was out in California. So I called them up and said, hey, you want to continue working on this project? So they met me out there and we interviewed her, and they helped me videotape that. So, you know, it stayed connected all the way from the time we started to the time we're premiering it here.
That was Buena Vista University Assistant Professor of Digital Media and self-proclaimed Disney fanatic, Jerry Johnson, and his students, Olivia Weisler and Mason McGrew, who worked on the documentary Growing Magic, the Mickey Mouse Cornfield Story, about the creation of a Mickey Mouse shape in a northern Iowa cornfield 30 years ago. Students premiered the documentary last night at Buena Vista University, and there will be a second screening Saturday night at Chapman University in Southern California. That's it for this edition of The Exchange. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week. I'm Mary Hartnett.